Tonight, this week, as we're going through current events and we're experiencing, all of us are kind of agitated and in pain. And this week, this year, we feel the crunch of the 3 weeks. We feel the pain of the Jewish people and the frustration of what is happening in the world, in that we're seeing that the Jewish people indeed don't have too many friends, that it's an Am Levadad Yishkon, that we're a nation that sits alone, and the bare decency to allow a people to defend themselves is not given. That's for everyone else, but that's not for the Jewish people. The Jewish people have to allow themselves like sheep to the slaughter, chas v'shalom. That's the opinion, that's the world opinion. And that is, in a sense, in some ways, when this happens, it makes me very angry. But on the other hand, there is a certain something that I get, because the world has not been too nice to the Jewish people for thousands of years. And if Mashiach comes and the nations of the world suddenly all pop up and they want to take part of the party and take credit for them always being there, and each one will stand and talk to God and say how we were nice to your children, well, at this point are very few that will be able to make that claim. Others will stand by in deep shame in the days of Mashiach, and will see that they don't deserve anything because of this kind of vicious treatment of tying our hands and not letting us do what we need to do. May Hashem help that the Israeli government and those in charge over the military should have the strength and have the ability to be able to ignore all this pressure and do that which needs to be done to finish up the job. And in this sense, as the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, would always say, if we would only be given permission to do, and if, he never said we should ask permission, he said we should just do it, but if we'd only do what we need to do, there would be far less casualties, not only amongst the on our side, on the Jewish side, but much less casualties on the other sides as well. It's only when you keep on interfering and stopping it which causes the casualties to fall on both sides. And that is a very, very big shame. So may Hashem help that this should be over. But let's see if we can find some kind of a inspiration, some kind of a connection to the current events in this week's parsha. Let us see if there's any legitimacy to the way this war is being fought from the other side. In this, that there are people that are mixing, that fighters are mixing into a population, and therefore defending themselves through a population. Is there any kind of spiritual strength, any kind of legitimacy in that kind of a war, and any kind of strength? Is there any power to what we call, well, what is called as the UN, which is causing so much problems to us? Is there any legitimacy to that? Well, by the end of this year, we will pull the rug from this, from beneath it all, and it won't have any existence whatsoever, because that's what it comes out from the Torah that we're studying today. So this Torah class, aside for the sharing of inspiration for all of us over here, is a means of a prayer and a means of a Torah. I'm not a rabbi with halachic authority to make a psak halacha, but I'm just quoting the defining elements as it is from the Torah. So this should clarify a Torah perspective, and Torah rules the world, so things should become very clear, and that the energy and the power, if there is any on the other side, should be completely disappear. It should dissipate and not be there anymore. Okay, so let's take a look. This week in the parsha, we learn how Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating to the Jewish people, he's doing a chazara, he's doing a review of the events that happened over the 40 years. This is, he's speaking to them 1 month, a little over a month, before his passing. On the month of Shvat, the first day of the month of Shvat, the 11th month, Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on the 7th day of Adar. It's about 37 days before Moshe's passing. And he's rebuking the Jewish people, and he's also reviewing with them the events that happened over the 40 years. And he says that during our travels, as we came closer to the land of Israel, we went through the lands first of the Edomites, and we wanted to go through their land, they didn't give us permission. And then Hashem told us, we shouldn't bother Moab, we shouldn't start up with the Moabites. So we went around the Moabites, we went around Ammon and Moab, and then we came to the land of Sichon and Og, the land of the Amorites. And we spoke about this a few weeks ago, how Moshe Rabbeinu sent to make peace with Sichon, but Sichon didn't want, and he, the king Sichon, came out with a massive army to fight the Jewish people. The Jewish people completely annihilated Sichon and his armies. They decimated the lands. So the Pasuk says in Perek Beis, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'yamin Hashem Elai, Hashem said to me, Re'ei, take a look, Achiloisi, I have begun Teis Lefanecha, to give before you, as Sichon ve'as Arzo, Sichon the king and his land. Hochel Rosh L'Reshes Ars Arzoi. I have begun to begin to take possession. Hochel Rosh, begin to take possession. L'Reshes Ars Arzoi, that you may possess his land. Vayetze Sichon L'Krasenu. Sichon came out towards us. Hu v'chal Amoi, he and all his people, L'Mochama, to war Yahatza, to a place called Yahatz. That was the place where that was the battlefield. Vayetneu Hashem Elokeinu, and it says that God performed the miracle. And that the idea that Sichon had was the cities of Sichon were very, very well fortified. They were surrounded, they had walls, they were well tunneled in. And it would have been very, very hard to fight them. So God put into their minds an idea to come out and fight the Jewish people all in unison outside of their cities. So they weren't cowards like the Hamas now that fight from amongst the people. They all left and they went out to fight. And then they were able to destroy them. And they beat him and his entire nation. And we captured as Kol Arav all of his cities, Be'esahi at that time. And we utterly destroyed all the cities. Masim Vanashim Vataf, men, women, and children, they were actually commanded by God. And I know, especially in a world that we are today, which thank God the human beings have become so sensitive to life, and it hits us very deeply to think of Chas V'Shalom, the killing of women and children. When it is the decree of Hashem himself, and when you have Moshe Rabbeinu, and when you have a nation that is essentially a nation of kindness and goodness, if we were told to do so by God, it's because Hashem knows what is evil and what is absolute evil and what must be rooted out at its core. So Hashem told the Jewish people to do this. And lo yisharnu sarid, we did not leave over a survivor. And then he goes on in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, and he goes to describe the territory that they took. Ma'aroyer from Aroyer, Asher al Sfas Nachal Arnon, which is on the edge of the Arnon Gorge, Va'ir Asheber Nachal, and the city that is in the gorge, Va'ada Gilad, until the northern border, Gilad, Lehoisa Kirya, Asher Sagva Mimenu. There was not even one city that was too strong for us. As Hakoil Nasan Hashem Elokeinu Lefaneinu, God gave them all before us. That's the Pasuk. So we captured, we conquered the entire land of the Amorites of Sichon. Now the Torah uses an interesting word, which when we're learning Chumash, we would hardly pay attention to. Even Rashi doesn't make us notice it. The Pasuk uses a term, Lehoisa Kirya. There wasn't a Kirya. Now what does the word Kirya mean? And the word Kirya is another word for city. Another term for city. Like we have in Israel, we have Kiryat Shmoneh. Right? You're familiar with that, Kiryat Shmoneh. And there are some little Hasidic towns called Kiryat Sanz, Kiryat Bells, right? Different. So a Kirya is a city. Now, the Torah in the last Pasuk, in Pasuk Lamed Dalid, verse 34, the Torah speaks about cities, but the Torah uses the other term. The Torah uses the term more common, arim, cities. Vanilka des kol arav, we captured all the cities. Over here, the Torah changes and uses the word kirya. Now, why does the Torah change? Why is the Torah shuffling the words from arim to kirya? We might say that it's just because the Torah wants to use for linguistic purposes, to make it sound, to flow a little better, to be a little more poetic, is when you're writing in something, you don't like to repeat the same word more than once because it gets boring. So in order to care about the reader, to keep us interested, the Torah changes around the words. We could say that, and there are Mefarshim that do learn that way, not over here, but the Arma Farshim, Ibn Ezra learns that way in different parts of the Torah, that sometimes the Torah uses different words, just as he calls it Yoifi HaMelitza. It's just, it should be linguistically nice. It should sound beautiful, that's why the Torah uses it. But if you hear it, would seem that that's not the reason. But the Torah is trying to tell you a chiddush, a novelty. Not only did we capture the Arim, not only did we capture that which is called Arim, the cities, but we also captured the Kirya. Not even a Kirya. That's what the Pasuk is saying. Lehoisa Kirya. There wasn't even one city that we couldn't conquer. Lashasagva memenu, that was withheld from us. Everything we took. Implying that for whatever reason, it would be more difficult to be able to capture, to conquer the Kirya, but we were able to take the Kirya as well. So that tells us that Kirya is not exactly the same like Ir. Ir and Kirya, even though the general in general it both means a city, but here it means a different kind of a city. So what is the difference? The Arma Farshim who say, and that is the Abarbanel, the Malbim. Not over here, the Malbim in last week's Parsha, in Parsha's Bamidbar. In last week's Parsha, in Parshas Maaseh, the Torah speaks about the cities of refuge, that when the Jewish people are coming to the land of Israel, they have to set aside special cities for a person that is escaping, for a person who killed someone unintentionally by accident, in order for him to be protected from the avengers of the blood, the family members that are avengers of the blood. In order that they shouldn't be able to kill him, he has to stay in this fort, in this secluded city until the time when the Kohen Gadol dies. It can be a month, it can be 50 years. He stays there until the Kohen Gadol passes on and then he can leave. So when it talks about those cities, the Pasuk uses the term Kirya. It says, let me read the Pasuk. It says in the end of Parshas Maaseh, last week's Torah portion, just give me a moment. It says over there, Vehikrisem, where we are. When you come into Kiatam Ovrim Esayardin, when they cross the Jordan River, Arzi Canaan, to the land of the Canaan, Yud Aleph, there will be city, you should prepare. Vehikrisem Lochem Orim, you should prepare for yourself cities. Ore Mikla Tiyana Lochem. So simply the word Vehikrisem, Rashi learns, means preparing. Rashi says it means Hazmana, you should prepare. However, other Mefarshim say the Hikrisem comes from the word Kirya. You should Kiryasize a city, make a city into a Kirya. So the Abarbanel, not the Abarbanel, the Malbim again, I keep mixing them up. The Malbim says that the difference between an Ir and a Kirya is that an Ir is an open city. A Kirya is a fortified city, a city with walls. And to prove that, he brings from the Psukim in our Parsha, when again, we're reading about the cities in the Sichon territory, with the Amorite kingdom, where the Jewish people conquered. So right after these psukim that we're reading now, in the further psukim, the Pasuk continues how the Jewish people went on to conquer the land of Og, the big giant Og, Melech HaBashan. So when they come to the land of Og, it says, V'nilka deskol Arav be'esahi, we conquered all his cities, in those times using the word Arim. Loihoisa Kirya, there wasn't a Kirya Shaloila Kachnu Me'itam, similar to what it says by Sichon, there wasn't a city that we didn't take. And then it says, Kol Eila, all of these, Arim, there were cities, Bitsura Ischaima, they are fortified with large walls, Gavaya, very high walled cities, Losayim with doors, Ubriach, and bolts. They're well bolted in. This is a very, and we conquered all those cities. So the Malbim says, from here you see that the idea of Kirya which is mentioned, Lo Haya Kiriya, the next pasuk explains that what are the Kiriya? These were all fortified cities, Betzureis Chaima. So that's the difference. And that would make a lot of sense over here, why the pasuk is saying, as a wonder, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to the Jewish people, that not only did we take the cities, but we also took the Kiriya, because Kiriya are more difficult to conquer, because the Kiryas are the fortified cities, walled cities, it's harder to be able to conquer, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu saying that even the Kiriya we were able to take. That's his explanation. The problem is that from the very proof where he tries to prove that that's what Kiriya means, that Kiriya means a city with a wall, you can prove the exact opposite. Since the Torah says these two ideas, Kiriya and walled cities, in two separate psukim, the first pasuk it says, Lo haisa kiriya shaloi lakachnu miyitam. There wasn't a kiriya that we didn't take. In the next pasuk it says, Kol eila, all of these are in Betzureis Chaima, were walled cities. Implying that a walled city is a separate entity. Yes, all these cities happen to be the ear, those cities that are called an ear, and those cities that are called a kiriya, they happen to be that they had walls. The Torah is saying an additional thing. They had walls. But that's not the definition of Kiriya, because if it would have been the definition of Kiriya, the Torah would have said it immediately. Kol Eila Lohoisa Kiriya, which is Betzureis Chaima, a city that is walled that has a wall around it. So it seems to say that it's two separate things. There are cities, regular ear, and then there are Kiriya, and then there is another entity, and there are cities that have walls around them. And the cities that have walls can either be an ear, or it can be a kiriya, but that's not the defining element that decides if it's an ear or a kiriya, if it has a wall around it or not. Another proof to the idea that we cannot say that kiriya, what it makes something be a kiriya and not to be an ear and not be a regular city, is the walls around it, because we're trying to say now that Moshe is saying we didn't only take the ear, but we also took the kiriya. Why? Because they had walls, and the walls are harder to conquer. Hold it. Didn't we just say earlier that the Sichon didn't fight from within his walls? What did Sichon do? He amassed his army. He took them out to fight Moshe Rabbeinu outside, in the open fields, in the open areas. That's where he fought against them. So then the condition of the city, if the city is walled or the city isn't walled, has no relevance to the war, because the war is not taking place in the city. If the Torah is implying that it would be more difficult to conquer the Kiriya, is implying that the Kiriya is a factor that is relevant, even if you're not fighting in the city, even if you're fighting outside of the city. So we need to understand what is the concept, what is the idea of Kiriya. So there's a sefer called Erkei HaKinuyim, which really means an encyclopedia. It's like a thoris. That's what it is. In what is it? Thoris. What? Whatever it is. I can't say that. It's like the. It's a hard word to say, right? What is it again? Thesaurus. All right. So, which is like an explanation of, right? Which is like a dictionary kind of. So in his sefer, which is a book on describing the defining different words, so he talks about the difference between ear and who is the famous book he made was the book called Seder Hadoras, which is a book about speaking on the history of one of the early history books written by a rabbi, Rabbi Halperin, many years ago. So he bikes in his sefer, he describes the difference between an ear and a kiriya as follows. He says that an ear is a less populated city, and a kiriya is a city with a greater population, a more dense population. That's what a kiriya is, a densely populated city. And he derives it from where? He derives it from the laws pertaining to we mentioned earlier, the cities of refuge. Because by the cities of refuge, we said over here, the Torah begins with Vehikrisem Lochem Arim. And as we said before, the word Vehikrisem, you should make for yourselves cities, and where the person who kills someone by accident can run away. The Torah uses vihikrisem, and the law, and there's an, and we said earlier that implies that the city should be a kiria. So there's interesting laws in regards to a city of refuge, and that is that the city has to be well populated. Maimonides says in the laws of Hilchis Rotzeach, I forgot to bring a Rambam over here, so you'll please give me just 1 second and I'll get it. The laws of Rotzeach in Perek Vav, in the laws of murderers, the laws of everything in the Torah. So there is a, here Rambam talks about this city. And he says about, done. Give me one over here. Oh, Irm, this is in Perek Ches, Halacha Ches. Are Miklot, the cities of refuge, Ein Oisem Noisem Loya Yaris Gedolos. You can't make them very large cities. The Loy Krachim Gedolim, they cannot be huge metropolitans. The reason for that is because you want to give less reason for the avenger of the blood to be able to first of all, to come to the city. If the city is a major, if it's New York City, you know, everybody comes to visit. It's a chasana today or tomorrow or bar mitzvah or something, a business. Something is going on that you're going, a convention or whatever it is that you're going. You want to have a city that's a little bit out of the spotlight. Because if it's like in the spotlight all the time, then you're always going to have traffic. And then the people that are relatives of the one that was killed will come for a visit, and they might bump into each other, and it's not going to be good. So therefore, you don't want to make it such a populated city. Loi gedoylem, loi ktanem, not that small. Ela yoros beinenes, it should be an average city. Ve'einum mashivanoisem elu b'mokim shvakim. These cities of refuge should be a place where there is a market, meaning there it has, we'll see in a minute why. U'b'mokim amayim, there has to be water over there. Ve'imein shamayim, if there's no water, machnisim l'toich amayim. They make aqueducts or whatever it is to bring water in. The reason for these things are because the pasuk says that venos, that this murderer, accidental murderer, the Torah calls him rotzeach, sadly, but the murderer has to run to this place, and he venos al achas ma'arim with one v'chai, and he should live. So we learn out from here that you have to help him survive. So he has to be a place where he's going to find a job. So there should be a market, and also there should be water there. It should be very livable. The ain mashiva noisan, and you don't make the city elo b'makom uchlesin, only where there is a population. There needs to be, we said it shouldn't be a metropolitan, but it should be a city that has a decent population. Nesmatu uchlesayim, if the population was diminished, maisifin aleim, you bring in other people to live there. You encourage people to move in and to live at the Arei Miklat, because you encourage people to live over there. Because it needs to have a population. Nismatu diyoreim, if the homes were diminished, less people living there permanently. Machnisan l'teichem kahanim levim yisraelim. So we bring kohanim and Levites and yisraelim to move into the city. Okay, that's what the Rambam says, and there's some more halachas. So. He says, this idea that you have to have the city be well populated, why does a city have to be well populated? Is because the city is called a kiria. The Torah says, v'hikrisem lochem orim. It has to be a kiria. And a kiria is a well populated city. That's his idea. This is how he derives it from. Based on this, we can say that that's what it would mean over here as well. The difference between the Arim is that the Arim may be, right, the cities, is they're not as populated, it might be a city, but the Kiria has a large population. But if you're reading our Psukim, you can't really say that, because it says clearly when the Jewish people conquered the cities of Sichon, it says we went into the cities, and we wiped out all the inhabitants of the cities, and it says men, women, and children, everybody, which means the city was populated. And then the Pasuk says there wasn't a Kiria that was not. So you have to say that even in a populated city, there is a difference between densely populated and regular populated. There is a regular city, and there is a densely populated city, and a ear is a regular city, and a kiria is a densely populated city. And there's something that turns a regular city into, obviously, a lot of people. So, but what is it? What exactly is the truth? I mean, how do you define that exactly? How many people? What's the idea that makes a city into a Kiryah? And why would that be something that we're saying, ooh, this was a novelty that they were able to capture a Kiryah? Not only were they able to conquer the regular city, but they were able to conquer the city that is densely populated, which is called the Kiryah. What is the idea behind it? So we'll understand that by further exploring the idea of Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge, which we spoke about, which is last week's Torah portion, which speaks about the special cities that you have to set aside for a rotzeach, for the murderer who runs to that city. This idea that we're learning over here in Maimonides, in Rambam, that the city has to be populated. What is the reason why? And again, if the population drops, we make sure to bus in other people. Other people move in because the city has to have lots of people. Why does a city have to be well populated in order to be an Arei Miklat? So all the other things we said earlier, why a city needs to have water, and why the city needs to have why it needs to have a market. These are things because, as we said earlier, these are all secondary elements. In other words, we're establishing a city, which the city is a... There were six cities in the land of Israel, six of them, that were the main cities of refuge. There were another 42 cities that were added, small little shtetalach, you call them, or little villages, you might say, where the Levites lived. They were also cities of refuge. But there were six main big cities where the people can run. Now, we said earlier, it's because the city needs to be a place where the man can make a living. V'chai, you have to help him, assist him. It should be kind of comfortable. It's bad enough that he's going away from his family. That's his galus. He's leaving, he's moving into this place, he's uprooting. He has to live in a place from his childhood city and town where he lived for over his regular community. He has to go away. We don't have to add extra hardship. Quite on the contrary, the Torah wants it to make us as comfortable as possible, that it should be livable. That's what it says. Okay. So therefore, one of the explanations that are given of why the city has to have a decent population, and that is the Ritva, it's one of the great Talmudists, one of the great commentaries on the Talmud, says the reason is because we want him, and particularly Rambam says that when we bring people in, we bring people that are Yisrael, Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim, which means what Rambam is trying to say, we bring people that have a Jewish lineage. It's not converts, because the Jewish people had many others that were amongst them, particularly Kohanim Leviim Yisraelim that are originally Kohanim Leviim. These are the ones that are come live in the city. So the Ritva says, because we want this person to live amongst people that are humble, and there is an intrinsic humility in our genealogy and in our genes from within the Jewish people, and also people that are compassionate, because the avenger of the blood, the avenger, the relative, the blood relative of the person who was deceased, the person that was killed, might come and want to kill this individual. So you don't want the people in the city to hand them over. So if they have a cruel nature, so that's what they'll do. They'll hand them over to the relative. But like this, if they're compassionate and they know that the Torah doesn't want this person dead, so they're going to protect him. Comes out according to this that this is not an intrinsic, inherent element of an Arei Miklat being an Arei Miklat, a city of refuge. It's rather a secondary element. Like we said earlier, you have to provide security. You have to provide him with all his needs. And one of the needs you have to provide them is security. And if you have people living among them that are not going to give him, that are not going to hand him over, that's part of his security. Okay. Another explanation is given, and that is by the Rogatchover in the Sefer Tzafnas Paneach, where he says, no, the reason this particular law, that the city has to be well populated, is related to the very power of the city acting as a city of refuge. In order for the city to be a protective city, it needs to be well populated, because if there's not a lot of people living there, you might end up with a problem. What's the problem? Since all the people who kill people by accident run to the city, it might get busy. And there might be a lot of these killers so to speak, living in the city. What's bad? It's not the nicest neighborhood, number one. Okay. But there is another problem. Okay, these people didn't kill intentionally, but still. But there's another problem. The problem is that the law is that if most of the inhabitants of the city are people that are there because they're there because they need to be there, if most of them, as in the words are called, are the rotzchim, those who killed the ones who murdered other people, again, even by accident, then the city is deactivated. It doesn't have the power of sheltering anymore. It can't be a city of murderers. Most of the population have to be innocent people. If there is a minority that are, then the city has power to protect. Therefore, we are afraid if the population diminishes, that you might get too many rotzchim, and then it's going to cease to have the power of protection. And then what might happen? Again, then they're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to be killed by the relatives, because it doesn't have a halachic criteria anymore to be a protective zone, to be a sheltered place, to be a secure place. So therefore, it's for the very activation of the city. This is an inherent law related to the very city itself. However, it was a good explanation. It seems like there's something more to it. Not only, because according to this, it's connected to its very miklat ability. You know, sadly, Jews are running into the miklat all the time now in Israel. People are running from the rockets into a miklat. In order for the miklat to be a miklat, for it to have the properties of miklat, essentially it doesn't need a large population. It's only a technicality. What's the technicality? If you're going to have more murderers living in the city, they're going to cancel the miklat. They're going to cancel its property of being able to be a miklat. And then you're going to defeat the purpose. So therefore, you have to always make sure that there's a large population. But again, it's related to the very essence of it being such a city, but it's still technical. From this that the Torah says this halacha, that the city needs to be populated, at the very onset when it introduces the idea of an ir miklat, it says, v'hikrisem lochem harim. That's the first thing it says about an ir miklat. It uses the term v'hikrisem lochem harim. It implies that the reason why it needs to be populated is not only to avoid a technicality, but it is essential for the very definition, for the very ir miklat to work as an ir miklat, it has to be a populated city. And what is the reason? What is the reason in that? What is the reason behind that? And the idea is as follows. It's a very, very special idea. And that is that when a person is running to the ir miklat, then not only what's sheltering them is not just this designated area that God designated. These are the borders. This is the area in which you're protected. That too. But there's something else to it as well. And that is, it's the population that's living in the city that are protecting the killer, the person, the murderer, from being killed by the relative. They are shielding him. Why are they shielding him? Because when he comes to live in the city, he becomes part of the larger community. He sort of melts in, his identity melts into the larger community. And he becomes one with the community. He's no more an individual. He's no more an independent being living on his own with his own independent entity. Now he has assimilated. Now he has become part of the larger community. And when he is part of the larger community, he is safe. Because there isn't that, he's not marked with the marker, chas v'shalom, God forbid, because he has lost his identity in the larger population. And this is the idea we find. The Zohar says something really, really fascinating. The Zohar says that when the Shunamis, this is a Zohar in Parshas Noach, the Zohar says, Rabbi Lazar says, Tochazi, take a look, the Zohar says, Bishata de Dina Sharia Ba'alma, and a time when there is judgment in the world, and a time of harsh judgment, a person should not have his name be mentioned above. Don't be noticeable when there is judgment up there. You don't want to stick your nose out and be... Why? Because if your name is mentioned, so then being that it's a time of harsh judgment and they're judging everyone, then the judgments are going to be mentioned. And they're going to take a good look if in a person's merits or not. Minolon Mishunamis. We learned this out from the Shunamis woman. This is the woman that Elisha, the great prophet, stayed by. He used to go and stay in her house. It says that he came to her one day and he said to her, it was the day he came to her and he said, and she hosted him, and then he said, what can I do for you? Simply to repay your kindness. Do you have anything that you need me to speak to the king on your behalf? So simply you read the story. He had connections. He's a prophet. So he can go to the king and ask her for a tax break, for a this, for a that, for zoning. She was building a new whatever. She needed a zoning easement or whatever it is. So, Dahu Yoima, but he said, but the Zohar says no. When it says, can I go to the king to speak on your behalf, the king is referring to God. And he said, because Dahi Yoima that day was Yom Tov the Rosh Hashanah Hava. This is the day of Rosh Hashanah. And Elisha is the big Rebbe. He's going to blow shofar. You know, when the Rebbe is blowing shofar, he's carrying up the names in front of Hashem, Toiva, right? The Kuchibrichu Doin Alma, and God is judging the world. Elisha said to her, Hayashtoch ledaber el ha-melech, should I speak to you for the king? Do Kuchibrichu, this is God. The Kedain Ikre Melech, who is now called king, Melech HaKadosh, the holy king, Melech HaMishpat, the king of judgment, like we emphasize Malchus and Rosh Hashanah. Vatoymer, and she answered him, B'toich Ami Onochi Yosheves, I'm sitting amongst my people. Don't put me out there. I'm getting lost in the community. Loi beina, I don't want the Yitkirin Li that they should mention me, the Yishguchin Bi, and they should take a good look in me. Ki alo betoich ami, I want to melt in, I want to assimilate into the people. Man da ayel reishe beinama, hear these words, a person that puts his head amongst the masses, a person who gets lost amongst the masses. Lo yishkinach alai lemeidin le labish, he's not judged. They're not going to look into him to judge him unfavorably, God forbid, and to, because you're not noticed, you're part of the masses. It's like the story, I don't remember, it's one of these jokes that the rabbis always tell about the person who was 100 and so years old, and the rabbi asked him why he's not coming to shul on Rosh Hashanah. So he said, I don't want my name to be mentioned. I've been doing pretty good till now, not being in shul. So he's coming and he's going to be mentioned, right? I don't remember the joke. It is a good joke, but I don't remember it. Tochazay. So this is the idea. So this is what the Zohar says. This is the idea of the Ir Miklat. When the person runs to the Ir Miklat, he is moving into a city and he's not being an individual anymore. Now he's lost in the city and he has the merit and he has the protection. But in order for the city to be called a communal place, and the city should not be just considered a place where there happens to be individuals living there, you can have a place, people living there, but do the people form a new entity called a community, a communal city, that requires the place to be densely populated. If it's very sparsely populated, then that's not a city. And we see this two things. First of all, there's a halacha in regards to the Beis HaMikdash. We learned the laws of the Beis HaMikdash during this time, that when you use any keli, any vessel in the temple, if you put something in those vessels, let's say you put wine in, so when does the wine become holy? When it goes in the vessel. But the halacha is kli shares einon mekachin. The kli shares only bring kedusha malayin when they're full. Only when you fill them to the top, then they bring kedusha. They sanctify the things inside. When they're not full and they're halfway, or they don't make it, because only when something is filled completely, that's when it has its impact. The city is a city, but when the city is filled with a population, that's when the city unifies the people to become one entity. It's a halach in Hilchas Erevin as well, in the laws of Shabbos, in the laws of an Erev, that you're allowed to walk. You know, there's certain restrictions on Shabbos of how far a person is allowed to walk on Shabbos. We have 2,000 cubits that we're allowed to walk on Shabbos, but if you're living in a city, you can walk for miles because the city is densely populated. The entire city is considered like 4 cubits. If you walk in Los Angeles, you can walk 50 miles, probably, or 30 miles. And you never go out, no problem with Chum Shabbos, maybe even a little further. You could probably walk almost to Palm Springs on Shabbos without a problem. because the whole area, all the way down, is densely populated, one after another. So it's considered, the whole thing is considered like four cubits. So, but that's only if there's lots of dwellers. If it's just the countryside, and there's a few people, one there's a road, and three people living on each, you know, within a 2 mile radius, that's not considered a city. So this is the idea. The city, and therefore, we can understand, the city being called a kirya, the pasuk says kirya, is essential for the very ability for the city to be able to protect this individual is only when the city is populated, because only then can the person melt into the community and cease to be an independent but be part of the community. That's, by the way, also the reason why the halacha is, the Rambam says, we bring, not only do we bring people to live in the city, but Rambam says we bring Kohanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim. And the Mefarshim asked the question, why do you have to have all three types? Especially, we said earlier, the reason is you want people that will be compassionate. Well, any kind of Jew is good. Why do you need to have all three different types, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, living in the city? Because it's not just that we need to have a community. We need to have a community that is similar, that is that represents the Jewish people as a whole. In other words, the person has to be assimilated into what we call Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people as a Klal, B'nai Yisrael as a whole. And for that reason, you need to have all different types. The three kinds of Jews, Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, which make up how the Jewish people are made up of, that's why the city has to have a population of all three different types, so that the city could be considered a complete, the city can be considered like this person has now become part, he has assimilated himself into the Jewish people, the entire Jewish people. By the way, that's also an interesting halacha, which it says, parenthetically, that in an ir miklat, you're not supposed to allow non-Jews, a Gentile, that wants to move in, even if he accepts the law, even if he accepts the seven Noahide laws, if he's not doing a full conversion, and he wants to live in the ir mik, he can live in other places in the land of Israel. Non-Jews are permitted to live in Israel. They can come visit, they can come to the Holy Temple, there's no restrictions. But to come permanent residence in Israel, so if someone accepts the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, it's called a Ger Toshav, he can buy a house, he can have permanent residence in the land of Israel. However, not in Yerushalayim, and not in Jerusalem, and not in any of these Ir Miklats. And the reason for that is, now we understand it, because this is similar to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim belongs to this is the city of the Jewish people. And therefore, it's only for the Jewish people. And the same is, the city of Ir Miklat has to be the city of Israel. Why? Because if the person took a life, that causes, even if it's only one singular life, that causes a gash and a blemish in all of the Jewish people. Because each person is an entire world. It's not like just one Jew. One Jew is part of the entire Jewish people. If this person took the life of one individual, this is considered a blemish that he hurt all of Israel. Rashi says, an interesting Rashi, Rashi says by Har Sinai, Rashi says that Hashem says, guard the mountain, put barriers around the mountain, make sure no one comes up on the mountain. Because if Chas V'Shalom, someone is going to come up on the mountain, V'nafal mimenu rav, and many of them will die if they're not careful, if they're going to go up on the mountain. So Rashi says, and this is from the Medrash, that even if one person dies, it's considered to me as if many have fallen. It's like an amrav. And that's why we know, we feel it in these days. Every time we hear the news, one soldier died, it's like an amputation. The pain that we all feel. And it's felt across the entire world. And the Jewish people are so connected. We want to know the name, the family. There is a deep, because we're so one. We're so inherently one. The person who took a life, in order for him to, because he has separated himself, needs to do an extra effort to reassimilate himself, to become part of that greater entity of the Jewish people. That's why the Eir Miklot has to be a populated city, and it has to be populated with Kohanim, Yisraelim, and Levim, so that this person becomes unified and identified with the community. And that's how he has the tikkun. And that's where we'll have another very interesting explanation. Why, if a city becomes, if there are so many of these people who accidentally killed someone, if the city has, we said before, if there's more of these people, if they become the majority, it doesn't work anymore. We said earlier, what's the reason for that? What's the reason for that? Why wasn't it working anymore? And now we understand, because part of the tikkun, part of the healing, part of the, is coming from the population. They, because they're the community. And since they all have this blemish, so then the law is, the rule is, en kateger nasa sneger, that the prosecutor cannot become the defender. The prosecutor cannot become the, being that they all have this blemish on them, they can't be the ones who are covering up and sort of absorbing this individual into their community to shield him and protect him. This is the idea of kirya. A kirya means a city where special effort has been made. First of all, it's densely populated, and special effort has been made for the people to become unified, integrated, and to become one community, as opposed to a bunch of people living in one place. Now, we know that the avenger of the blood, the relative, besides the physical meaning, also refers to the satan. It says that the satan, the Yetzirah, is called the avenger of the blood, because, and he comes to avenge the blood of every sin. Every sin spiritually, and Chassidus, we spoke about this many times in different classes, every sin spiritually is considered to some degree spilling blood. Why? Blood is life. And God's, the flow of life that Hashem flows, that is flowing from God to the world, where Hashem intends that blood to flow to Kedusha, to our souls, and remain within holiness. If God forbid, when a person does an Avera mystically, they're causing energy that is meant to go to Kedusha to leak and to be redirected and to be channeled to the forces of unholiness. The forces of unholiness, chas v'shalom, become strengthened as a result of every avera. So it's considered spilling blood. You're taking God's blood, the blood of Adam, of the supernal man, which is supposed to go where Hashem is intending it to Kedusha, and giving it away to the unholy. There's a person who comes to avenge the blood, and that is the satan. The greatest thing a person can do, even let's say you didn't get a chance to do tshuva, you didn't have a big avera, one avera, two averas, 10 averas, 1,000 averas, 1,000,000 sins, whatever it is. You didn't get a chance yet to do a tshuva. So then the thing is, you go to Eir Miklat. You go onto an Eir Miklat, to a safe place. When you do tshuva, you're clean. But not always do we know, our heart is not always there. We're not always ready to do tshuva. Sometimes we know it's going to take till Yom Kippur. Sometimes you know we're going to need to have a calm time. What do you do to be protected? After all, there are the bad guys that are after you. That's it. They're after you. They're coming to get you. The satan is up there trying to, God forbid, evoke judgments. How does a person protect himself? The best insurance plan, the best protection you can do to be secure, is to become a communal activist, to become integrated into community, not to stand alone, to join along, to daven with a minion, to identify with the community and be involved with the community, and not so that your name should be hanging out on a plaque, because then, again, you're putting yourself out. No, your identity is the community. Because when you're that, then you're safe. Because you're not seen as an individual, you're part of a greater whole. And that's why it says in Medrash, very powerful Medrash, that when a person is ba'achtus, and when people are unified and part of a community, no one can beat them. They're unbeatable. The forces of judgment cannot harm a person when they're included in a community. This is the Medrash in Parshas Naso. It says, even if the Jewish people do the worst of sins, they serve idols, but they get along with each other and they're tight with each other. Hashem says, the satan, the Satan, cannot harm them. Shanamar, and he brings a pasuk to that. Chavoyer atzavim, that even that a chibur, an attachment of atzavim, of those who serve of idolaters, Hanach atzavim Ephraim, the sinners of Ephraim, Hanach loy, leave them alone. They're protected. There's another place where it says, when the Jewish people would go to war in the days of Achav, who was a wicked king, and the Jewish people were influenced by his wickedness, when they would go to war, they would be victorious. And in the days of King David, the Jewish people would go to war, and even though they were all great tzaddikim and very righteous people, they would go to war and they would lose. And they would be defeated, chas v'shalom. And it says the reason is because there they were in peace, they got along with each other, and over here they were fragmented. Shalom is the biggest protection. Achdus is the deepest protection. And that is the reason why that's the safest thing to do. Now we understand what was the story with Sichon, with those cities that were called Kiryas. Sichon and Og were giants, but they weren't only physical giants, they were spiritual giants as well, which means they knew, they understood the forces and the energies above. And they knew the power of unity. And they put in special effort that their cities should not only have physical power and physical strength and be fortified, but they should have in order to emphasize their strength and to protect themselves, they got everybody to become unified. There was a unity in there amongst the city. And that was the idea of having this Kirya, a city that was... Now, that works not only for Jews. That works seemingly for non-Jews as well. Like we find, the Medrash tells us the difference of the generation of the flood that were completely destroyed and Hashem wiped them out completely, and the generation of the dispersion, the Dor HaFlaga. And they were punished just that the Hashem split their languages and they were divided into different ethnicities and different groups. But the generation of the flood were completely wiped out. And the Medrash says why, and Rashi brings it. And the answer is because the generation of the flood were cruel to each other. They were thieves, they were robbers. And therefore there was no civilization. And for that reason they were completely destroyed. The generation of the dispersion had a bigger crime. They came to fight against God. They built a tower to fight against God. But because they were unified, they were not wiped off the map. They were punished, but it was not anywhere close to the destruction of the generation of the flood. And this is what the people of Sichon and those cities were all about. It was a strength that came as a result of unity. And may I say that possible, as I was reading this today, it occurred to me. Every physical thing that happens down here below is connected to some spiritual power, even if the people down here below are not conscious of it. The fact that the terrorists are entering into large, densely populated cities, and they're shooting rockets from the middle of this of the city, where men, where there's children and women, and from there they're fighting. Aside for the technical viciousness of using this as human shields, there is a spiritual shielding in which they're protecting themselves in the fact that they're within a community. Like we said earlier, the person who's the murderer, who runs to a place like this, and he's safe. So first of all, is based on what we said before, if the city is mostly populated by murderers, the whole idea of miklat falls away. Which in this case, I think it probably is. Probably is. But even not that, so we need, but it is a power. But why? So then, and now we understand why Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that not only did we conquer the ear, but we conquered even the kirya. Because it's very, very tough to defeat a force that's unified. How did the Jewish people conquer Sichon? So what was their power to defeat Sichon? And the answer is that the unity that it's possible amongst Gentiles is a very limited and external unity. True unity can only be accomplished when there is a complete negation of ego, when there's a complete negation of self and what we call a bittul, nullification. Being completely, when you're not a somebody, when you become a nobody in the sense that you relegate yourself and give yourself over to a higher mission and to a higher cause. And so then you're unified with all, whoever it is that is unified, that their identity and their being is this higher cause and this higher mission. The Jewish people are here for a higher mission. And it's not a detail in our life. This is our very being. This is our very existence. We're here to spread God's name in the entire world, to reveal Elokus, to reveal Hashem in the world. That's our very beingness. And therefore, there is a deep, deep, essential bittul, an essential nullification at the root. Even though we too have ego, but the ego is an outer crust, an outer covering on the true nature of the Jewish soul, which is essentially egoless. And that's why we're called Yidin. Yid, Yud is a tiny little dot. Because a Jew is essentially, we said earlier, humble. And it's this humility that allows the Jewish people to be considered one entity and one unit. The Gentile can unify for a common cause, but it's only as much as that cause is, and only short-lived, and it's only temporary. It does not have any lasting power. This is something seen halachically. Halachically. The Mishnah says, the Gemara says in Masechtis Nazir, Daf Samach Aleph, the Mishnah says, the Gemara says over there, the Gemara says that there is no tumah, there's no defilement by Gentiles. The Gentile, a Jew can become defiled. The Gentile doesn't become defiled with the same serious defilement as a Jew. And the reason that is because it says, v'nichrisa ha-nefesh ahu, that if a person becomes defiled and then goes into the Beis HaMikdash, right, that person should be cut off mitoch ha-kahol, from amongst the congregation. So the Gemara says, by people that have a kohol, they have a congregation, by them there can be tumah because they can be cut off from the congregation. But those who don't have essentially a congregation, you can't be cut off from the congregation. So the Gemara says clearly that there's no din tzibur. The concept of tzibur, a community in which everybody ceases to be individual and you become part of one greater mush called the community, that's the Jewish community. Kedusha is achdut, is achdus, is oneness. The other side, klipa, the unholy, is fragmentation. In as much as something is closer to holiness, the more unity it has. Further away from holiness, the more splintered and fragmented it is. That's why the sages, we also know, it was interesting, I heard this from the Tolna Rebbe, he was here a few years ago. His mother just passed away. He should be a schus for his mom, and he should be have a nichum. I just saw this week. So the Tolna Rebbe, when he was here, said a story that during the Bilis trial, when there was an accusation, there's the last blood libel that Jews kill Christians to take their blood to make for the matzah. One of the proofs during the trial was that the prosecutor was arguing that Jews don't look at non-Jews as humans. And they brought up a piece of the Talmud. It says, Atem keruyim Adam. They said these words. It says in the Talmud, Atem keruyim Adam, you're called man. Ve'ein umayso oilam keruyim Adam. And the nations of the world are not called man. This was a statement from the Talmud. Just clear evidence. Jews think they're higher than the rest of the world. They're humans, other than us. So what's the big deal of using Christian blood? This was their argument. It was a problem. And we needed an answer. The truer meaning of this is, that doesn't mean, God forbid, that only Jews are humans. There are five names to a human being. Ish, Enosh, Gever. Adam is the highest name for the human being. Adam means similar to God. It's a very high name. That's what it means, that it's particularly the Jewish soul that is from a higher place that has that sublime level. Okay. But they were sending the question to the rabbis to find a good answer. There's a great rabbi in Poland. His name was Rameir Shapiro. He was the one who authored the initiated the idea called the Daf Hayomi, where Jews learn one page of Gemara every day. So I think it was he. That gave an answer. He sent an answer. And he said like this. What the sages mean when they say Atem Kruyim Adam means you are called Adam. Adam means one man. He says when Jews are hurt, in one place in the world, all the Jews are in pain. All Jews are in mourning. All Jews are saying Tehillim. All Jews have a bad day when another Jew is hurt. That kind of unity and that kind of depth of connection and identification and empathy and caring is only amongst the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are an Am Echad. We have one soul. And it's not like something happened to other Jews. It's a true, real, deep, inherent oneness. And when the sages say others are not called Adam, it means they're not called Adam Echad, singular. Of course they're people and humans. And he says the word Adam, interesting, doesn't have a plural. All the other names, Gever has Givarim, Enosh has Anashim, Ish. Each of them has a plural. But Adam, you don't say Adamim. It's only Adam. It's only in the singular. The Jewish people are called Adam. Therefore, the Sichonites, the Sichon and Og, even though they were able to create a community, a communal city, it didn't have the depth and the true power of Achdus, of unity, and it couldn't stand up against the unity of the Jewish people. When the Jewish people came to fight them, the Jews fought them with Jewish unity. And Jewish unity is infinitely deeper and infinitely truer than the external unity, which is an outer unity of the Sichonites and the Amorites. And therefore, it was completely demolished. And this was particularly happening as the Jews were crossing. Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about this week in the Parsha. It particularly is discussed as the Jews are crossing into the land of Israel for the first time. Because this idea that the Jewish people achieved the status of tzibor, of a unified community, happened only when we came into the land of Israel. We see in Parshas Netzavim, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, says to the Jewish people, I am now putting you through, Atem Netzavim Ayom, I'm putting you through a covenant. And part of the deal of the covenant was, what's the difference between the covenant then at the covenant of Sinai? The covenant of Sinai, every Jew was responsible only for himself. Each of us took responsibility. I'm going to keep the mitzvahs for myself. I didn't have any responsibility for my neighbor. And if my neighbor is sinning or violating the commandments, it has nothing to do with me. I'm okay. It doesn't affect me. But once the Jewish people made the covenant, when Moshe Rabbeinu, Atem Netzavim Ayom, Kulchem, all of you together, is since they were entering the land, they became one entity. The land unifies us. The land makes us into one. That's the connection. And the Jewish people become a tzibor. And from that point and on, every Jew is responsible for every other Jew. Because we're one. It's not two entities anymore. This happens in the land of Eretz Yisrael. The sages say, and the Gemara says, that there's no real tainus tzibor in Bavel. In Babylonia, outside the land of Israel, even though there were so many Jews living there, but they were not in Israel. In Israel is where you have, in Eretz Yisrael is where you have the truest meaning of Am Echad, of the Jewish people being a real tzibor, a real entity called the community, totally one. When the Jews were conquered, now this war against the Amorite king was not in Eretz Yisrael. It was outside. Because the Amorites' kingdom and Sichon and Og, they lived on the other side, on the western side of the Jordan. And the Jews were they were on the east side of the Jordan. They were crossing west over the Jordan. So they were on the east side of the Jordan, which is not Eretz Yisrael. Later, the tribes of Reuven and Gad decided to live there. But in essence, it's not part of Eretz Yisrael. But this conquest was leading them into the land of Israel. And according to, and therefore it was to some degree considered part of the conquest of Israel. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu felt, we're going to see next week's parsha of Eschanan, Moshe felt that since he was already in the corridor of Israel, since he had already conquered the land of Sichon and Og, he felt that Hashem told him that you may not come into the land, that decree has been annulled, because you see, I've gotten in already, I've gotten one foot in. So you see that it's considered a part of the conquest of the land of Israel. And according to some opinions, the land of Sichon V'Og is part of the covenant, Bris Bein Absarim, that Hashem said that I'm going to give to Avram. So it definitely is stage one in the conquest of the land of Israel. And that is why it's exactly at this juncture in history where the Torah emphasizes that we fought and we defeated communal cities. Because in order for the Jewish people to be able to be forged as a community, they first had to annihilate and destroy an external fake unity that was presented by Sichon and Og. In other words, an achdus of klipa, the unity of klipa, the unity of the impure, of the shell, of the extraneous forces, which is not a true unity, it's a deceptive unity, that unity needed to be blown apart before the Jewish people can be fully established as a united entity in the land of Israel. And that's the reason, and being that we don't always know our mission as much as our enemies know our mission. They sense it before us. So from the way they come to fight us, then we know what our job is to do. So the reason why Sichon and Og established themselves with the power of Achdus to fight against the Jewish people, because they knew that that's the biggest accomplishment the biggest victory for holiness is going to be when there is a Jewish unity in the land of Israel. And that's why they're standing on the border, blocking them with their fake unity, but it did not stand up against the unity of the Jewish people. And that's why we were able to blast through it and reveal and come through and destroy it. And we conquered, the Moshe Rabbeinu says, we conquered even those cities, and we're able to take the land of Israel and become a true nation, an Am Echad, a real nation of oneness. This is, as we said earlier, relevant today in the war against the Jewish people today from Gaza, and which, as we said earlier, trying to fight from within a community. There we can see clearly it's not a true unity at all, because there's no caring of members of the community for the other side of the community. Quite on the contrary, the people are using other people and hoping that they will be killed for their own benefits. So the whole thing is total opposite of unity. And the same is also this entity called United Nations, which is the biggest lie that has ever existed. Also with a false caring, with a false kind of show of compassion and kindness for innocent people that are being killed, and it has absolutely nothing to do. King David says in Tehillim, I was reading the other day, save me from people asher p'em divrei shav, that their words are words of lies, v'yaminam, and their right hand, yamin sheker, is a false right hand. What does it mean? The right hand is a false right hand. The right is kindness. The kindness is a false kindness. There's hundreds of thousands of women and children that are butchered in Syria in the last 2 years. Hundreds of thousands tortured with the worst kind of tortures. Look it up. Take a look at what's going on in the torture jails in Syria. And no one says a word. No one says a word. And here, when people are trying to defend themselves of ongoing rockets, and we're doing whatever we can to try to avoid a civilian from dying, and there is a false kindness, a false, it's so shekardig, because it doesn't have any emes to it. It's a simple anti-Semitism. It's a simple fight against the Jewish people. Anything that can be done to harm Israel and to harm the Jewish people. This is the last fight, clearly, of the unholy against holiness. But our achdus, our unity that the Jewish people have had, and you see an amazing thing. Right before this war, we saw an incredible unity when the three boys were killed. And it unified the left and the right and all the Jewish people. Even the most of secular were unified with davening, with saying Tehillim, and feeling the pain and connecting. We all connected together. This achdus, we know we're in the 3 weeks, the second temple was destroyed because of baseless hatred. We come together now, we have to cast aside all the external differences, what a person looks like, what his level of observance is. All that is pushed to the side. There's only one thing important right now, is that we together as a people are unified together with love, with caring, with determination. And Am Yisrael, the Jewish people, will be victorious. We're going to defeat our enemies. This false union of nations that has no emes to it is going to fall apart. And the emes of Hashem and the emes of the Jewish people and truth will prevail. And Be'ezras Hashem already, way before Tisha B'Av, we're going to be celebrating the biggest celebration of all time. May we merit to see it now. In the sun, they're cool, lost, you know.
Go, you can't keep it now, you even.